produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Joseph Cottrell and Ken Fuller. This is Yes Music Podcast, episode 624. Yes Tour with Deep Purple.
Hi, this is Trevor Rabin, and you're listening to the Yes Podcast.
Welcome to episode 624 of the Yes Music Podcast, Two Fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host Mark Anthony Kay will be along in a few moments. You can always get involved with the podcast yourself via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. It was lovely to welcome back onto the YMP our friend and patron Jeff Bailey this week. Mark and I spoke to him about the recent news that Yes will be on tour with Deep Purple in the US and Canada this summer. What do you think of that idea? Well, self-confessed Deep Purple fan Jeff shares some thoughts with us, and we discuss pretty much every aspect of the forthcoming tour, as you would expect. Do leave your own thoughts on the show notes for this week. Over on the Metaverse, Jeffrey Mason's list this week included Prog Magazine's review of Rick Wakeman at the Royal Theatre in London, a photo of Steve Howe performing at Asia in 1983, while Yes themselves were doing other things elsewhere, three reports of Rick Wakeman's very successful tour of Brazil that's just finished, Sammy Meister's tribute to Steve Howe on YouTube, that's an interesting listen, a 1973 concert poster for and a review of Yes and Poco in Houston, a review of Tormato from 1976, a photo from 50 years ago this week when the Relayer tour kicked off in Newcastle, a review of a concert on the 10 True Summers tour in 1978 from Ottawa, a report of the forthcoming John Anderson and the Band Geeks concert at the Great South Bay Music Festival, as well as the official trailer for that tour, a recent interview with Steve Howe about supporting Jethro Tull in 1971, an unfortunately fairly rough video of a band from Berklee College of Music playing Sound Chaser, a feature in Spanish about Rick Wakeman's Six Wives of Henry VIII, a photo of Chris Squire attending the Amnesty International 1988 Los Angeles concert, a photo of John Anderson at Greensboro Coliseum in 1972, a 2006 article asking, is Yes Songs the best live album ever? And news that some signed Rick Wakeman photos are going under the hammer for the Bob Moog Foundation. Not to be outdone, Doug Curran added the following, a happy birthday to Benoit David, an alert that pre-ordering is underway for Stephen Lamb's new book from his rock classics range. It's 90125. A nice photo of Oliver Wakeman and his band after their Winter's End concert this week. His signed copy of Carl Palmer's new box set, Fanfare for the Common Man. A new Billy Sherwood interview where he answers easy questions, like how do you respond to those that say Yes shouldn't exist? And more tour news. Asia will be touring the US this summer with Focus, Martin Turner's Wishbone, Ash and Curved Air, although Carl Palmer won't be with them. Mark Bradford Barber mentioned the 20th anniversary of two Yes 35th anniversary shows, if you see what I mean, as well as the 33rd anniversary of a Union Tour show from Hartford, Connecticut, and John Pickles picked up a mint condition 1969 first press of Yes, but with a later label. Chris Berry shared a great live photo of Oliver Wakeman and band at Chepstow this week, and Miguel Falcao has reached the 10th anniversary of his wonderful Play for Chris project. Do get involved with that at miguelbass.com. John Perez shared two videos of Close to the Edge's rehearsal for their forthcoming debut show, and Stephen Schinder advertised his Drum Talk TV forthcoming live stream performance from Oliver Wakeman. Michael Quatella, I hope that's how you pronounce your name, Michael, added a great prog cartoon I've seen before, but it's still funny, and Jilly Goodness was eagle-eyed and eagle-eared enough to catch the Billy Sherwood interview on BBC Hereford and Worcester. Blimey. Many thanks to everyone who's been in touch in any way this week, including those who contacted me via email and other ways about last week's episode with Gennaro Rippo, Margaret Evans, Doug Curran and Paul Hales.
Yes Music Podcast, 12 True Summers.
It's wonderful to have Mark back and Jeff Bailey joining us. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin. How are you doing?
Not too bad, thank you. And Jeff. Hello, Jeff.
Hello. Thank you for having me back, guys. Good to hear from you again.
Yes, absolutely. Plenty to discuss today. We're going to talk about the forthcoming US and Canada tour that Yes are going on this summer. Yay. With Deep Purple, which is excellent news, of course, for Mark, as he's over that side of the pond.
Yes.
But first of all, let's just have a think about the whole concept of going on tour with Deep Purple and Yes, and what the kind of situation with it is. So this is how Yes announced it on their own website, yesworld.com. They say, Yes joins Deep Purple. Yes have announced that they will tour with Deep Purple this summer, launching August the 14th in Hollywood, Florida, and wrapping September the 8th in Scranton, Philadelphia, PA. That's what that means, isn't it? And there are a number of dates there. It's not an extensive tour, but it does cover, as we've just said, Canada as well as the US. And this is how Deep Purple announced it on their website. So they're calling this the One More Time Tour. It's sort of Deep Purple equals One More Time Tour. I'm not quite sure exactly why that is. But anyway, this is how they announced it. One More Time North America Tour, it says. One More Time Tour celebrating over 50 years of Smoke on the Water with Yes. Deep Purple, one of Britain's most influential bands, today announced One More Time Tour of the US with a stop at the Hard Rock Live in Hollywood, Florida, to celebrate over 50 years of Smoke on the Water on Wednesday, August the 14th. They will be shaking the walls of US amphitheatres this summer with an explosive lineup of unforgettable hits taken from their repertoire of rock spanning half a century. Joining Deep Purple on their US tour is Yes, making each stop on the tour an unmissable event for rock fans everywhere. Okay, unmissable event. That sounds pretty good. So let's go to Jeff first. When you first heard, Jeff, that Yes were, well, it's difficult to say. We're going to come back to this in a minute. But anyway, going out on tour with Deep Purple in the US and Canada, what was your first thought, Jeff?
I think it's a pretty good combination. You know, you end up being able to play bigger venues when you put those two bands together. And I would imagine, you know, if I was a American Yes fan, I'd potentially feel maybe that I wouldn't be getting as long a show, I guess, if Yes had been doing a headlining tour themselves. Maybe if you're not into Deep Purple, then it's not quite such an appealing combination. If it was happening in the UK, reasonably near to me, I know that I would definitely be interested and would see it as a good thing to have them both together. So, yeah, I mean, positive from my point of view.
Yeah, interesting. I'll tell you about my reaction in a minute. But, Mark, clearly this is over your side of the pond, as we've already said, coming to Canada. What was your first thought, though, when you heard that it was Deep Purple with Yes? Or the other way around, Yes with Deep Purple.
Well, as you just hinted, I was pleased about the fact that I get to see Yes, finally, again, on this side of the country here, or this side of the ocean. And Deep Purple with them, I mean, I don't know. When I first heard that, I was kind of like, you know, who's headlining? I guess Deep Purple is, right? But I mean, I had to chuckle when you're like, one more time. It's like, you've been saying one more time for the last 10 years. It's been this is like the longest goodbye I've seen since Kiss, you know? It's unbelievable how long these guys have been saying that they're finally packing it in. But, you know, Deep Purple, I had a period where I was really into Deep Purple for a while, mainly because of Steve Morris. But as soon as he left, I was just like, forget it. I lost all interest in Deep Purple after that, because he, to me, was the reason why I was watching Deep Purple. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to give the other guy, you know, no credit. I'm sure he's a good guitar player and I'm sure he's doing fine. But, you know, you lose Ritchie Blackmore. Okay. And that's one big thing. Yeah. And then you replace him with somebody really good like Steve Morris, and now you lose him now. And it's like, okay, you know what? You don't have John Lord. And you know, it's funny because it's almost sounds like a Yes fan complaining about Yes, you know. but the thing is, though, Yes kind of, you're only kind of used to that. Yes have been doing this for like a long time, replacing people. Like every album almost there was somebody different in the band.
Yeah.
You know, but Deep Purple, they sort of had a no, I wouldn't say a perfectly solid lineup, but they had people in there for a lot longer, I feel, than, you know, Yes did on some, you know, chunks of their career. So going to see them, yeah, it'll be good to see them. I want to go see them. I know Billy told me last time when they went out that, you know, hopefully this time I can go back and hang out with them because I missed them when they came for the Royal Affair Tour. We were supposed to meet up, but he got caught in traffic coming back, so I wasn't able to hang out with him, sorry. So this time, hopefully I will. And, you know, I'm going to enjoy, obviously, the Yes show. And hopefully, fingers crossed, I'll play something from the latest record. And it should be a good time.
I do have to jump in just momentarily and defend my fellow countryman, Simon McBride, who's the new Deep Purple guitarist. All I'll say, Mark, is don't judge the guy until you've seen him in action. He's really, really excellent.
I've seen some footage of him, when they showed it on YouTube. I mean, like I said, he's not a bad guitar player, but I almost kind of look at it like, and I'm just going to be blasphemy to you, Jeff, but it's almost like Trevor Rabin and Steve Howe. I mean, you know, Steve Morris is such a fantastic, technically great guitar player. I love everything about his playing. I love his amp setup, how he has the wet, dry, wet setup and everything. But it just, I don't know. The other guy hasn't done anything to really excite me yet. But maybe if I see him live, it'll change.
Okay. Well, something else I wanted to go into, though, just for a minute, and we'll come back to lots of different aspects of this in a minute. But you describe yourself as a pretty big Deep Purple fan, Jeff, and give us a brief overview, because, you know, I know the Deep Purple of the early 70s, mid 70s, and I know that music, and I love it. It's fantastic stuff. Since then, has their trajectory been similar to Yes? Certainly when I looked on Wikipedia, which is always the font of all wisdom, of course, and it's always completely accurate. But when I looked at Deep Purple, they did seem to have got through, despite what Mark was saying about, you know, a core of them always being in the band. But they do seem to have gone through almost as many players as Yes. So what's your view of kind of the past few decades of Deep Purple?
Yeah, well, if you indulge me, and I guess this is kind of Deep Purple 5% or stuff. Yes and Deep Purple formed roughly around the same time. In fact, the band that Deep Purple became, the band that turned into Deep Purple was called Roundabout. So there you go, right from the start, there was a connection. I guess they had an early period with a different lineup. They had, you know, a key member change in the same way that when Steve Howe joined Yes, Gillan and so on joined Deep Purple, you know, and then I suppose, you know, they kind of ran aground probably in the mid 70s where Yes managed to make that jump with Going for the One. I think probably the parallel I would draw of the last number of years is, and again, this may be blasphemy to some Yes people, but I think, to Mark's point, Steve Morse joining brought a degree of stability to many years of fluctuating lineup changes, probably in the same way that actually John Davison's solidified, you know, Yes's way forward. Probably different to Yes, that they have maintained, you know, putting albums out every 3 to 4 years. The last number of albums that they've put out have been really, really excellent. And I suppose, you know, they've probably had a longer period, you know, Yes with The Quest and Mirror to the Sky. I think most people generally regard them as pretty good Yes albums. And I think Deep Purple, in the Deep Purple world, the last 3 or 4 albums that they have put out have been really good studio albums as well. And that has enabled them to, you know, to keep active and, presumably play these live shows. Like Yes, they don't really play, you know, a huge amount of new material. They rely a lot on the back catalogue. So there's a lot of similar parallels, I would say, between the two bands and their history.
Yeah. When I had a look back during the week at the links between live Yes and live Deep Purple, I was very surprised to see that actually Yes have only shared the bill 5 times with Deep Purple in the whole of their career so far, and then 2024, obviously, they've got this tour coming up. And the first three times that they played on the same bill was in 1969 and then 1970. So not since 1970 have these two bands played at the same venue at the same time, which I think is really quite remarkable. Most big bands of the time, you know, the 60s and 70s, have played with Yes at some point in the intervening time. So it's interesting that they haven't. But Mark, Deep Purple and Yes, I mean, Yes, the greatest progressive rock band in the world. Of course, Deep Purple, not really progressive, or am I wrong? And is it going to attract the same sorts of people? I mean, are Deep Purple fans all going to be keen on seeing Yes and vice versa? Yes fans keen on seeing Deep Purple?
Well, I've never considered Deep Purple prog, ever. Mm. I mean, to me, they've always been the epitome of hard rock to me. I mean, when I think of Deep Purple, I think of John Lord and that, you know, Hammond organ blasting through Marshall stacks. That's Deep Purple. And, you know, Richie Blackmore doing his, you know, little guitar noodlings and shredding, and Ian Gillan with his wah! Really high singing and stuff, right? Like, that to me is like, you know, hard rock. I mean, like, if you don't own, you know, In Rock or Machine Head, then you need to have your, you know, hard rock card taken away and slapped upside the head pretty hard. Same if you need to have, you know, Burn and Stormbringer, which are fantastic records. And I'm a big fan of Come Taste the Band. I've always liked that record. I thought it was good. Yeah. And then, of course, you have The Return with Perfect Strangers. And, I mean, the last couple records that they talked about, like Now What, I was all in on. I thought that was really good. Infinite, I thought was really good. Whoosh, I thought was a little overrated. I thought everybody was thinking, oh, great record, but I don't think it was as good as Infinite at all. Mm-hmm. And Turning to Crime, I just was not interested in at all. But I think it's going to be different audiences. I mean, most people that I saw, at least in my Facebook feed that I have, most people were kind of like, oh, cool, Yes is coming. I probably will leave after when Deep Purple comes on. And then the opposite, people are like, oh, I'll probably hang out in the merch area until Deep Purple comes on, you know? Right. So I'm curious to see how it'll be, because I'm wondering if we're going to see, like, you know, different sections of the audience in at certain times and never have a full complete house. You know what I mean? The way people are talking. But I don't know. I think sometimes people are just talking and maybe people will be there and maybe maybe the bands will keep them interested. I mean, that's the whole point about being a middle band, is you need to try to keep the audience's attention. And, you know, but most people, I think, know who the heck Yes is by this point in their career. So especially if you're a Deep Purple fan, I mean, it's kind of been the same time era, you know, since they've been around. So it won't be difficult to know who Yes is or Deep Purple. So I don't know. I think it's going to be different audiences, but let's see how they'll act. Will there be a big brawl in the middle of the show or something, you know, people throwing bottles at each other? Or will it be, you know, harmony and kumbaya? Who knows?
Hopefully not.
I think that there's probably a fair point for saying that Yes fans would probably have more of a tolerance for Deep Purple than maybe the other way around.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, thinking of Deep Purple and Yes recently in terms of live concerts, I did a little bit of research and I had a look at some of the venues that Deep Purple and Yes have played recently. And what I'd like you both to do, starting with Jeff, is to please explain to me what's going on. So the Yes 2024 tour, I'm going to see them in Symphony Hall, Birmingham, and the capacity there is 2,262. And then they're going somewhere called Red Box Sparkassen Park, which has a 1,250, so 1,250 capacity. Madrid Sala Riviera, 1,800. And Sala Play Paris, I can't pronounce that, 2,000. Okay. Now, compare that with Deep Purple's 2024 tour, you know, that's currently underway. Other dates that they've had, apart from these ones that I picked out, were festivals. So you can't really compare that because there's a whole bill of different bands. Mm-hmm. That doesn't count really in this little analysis. So Zenith Toulouse Metropole, capacity 11,000. That's them just playing on their own. The Taz Imagine Stadio in Belgrade, 10,500. And then there was a Rome Auditorium, 5,128 if they're standing. So clearly, we'll come back to how big the US and Canada ones are that they're going to share in a minute. But Jeff, what's going on? Why? How can Deep Purple get 10 times as many people to come to see them as Yes can these days?
I think that's got a lot to do with, you know, the history of the band. I mean, Deep Purple were very much the founding fathers of, you know, their genre, and you know, they've pretty much had that sort of sustained level of following right the way through. Mark mentioned, you know, when they reformed for Perfect Strangers in the 1980s, you know, when they played Nebworth, you know, they played that kind of size of venue, and yes, you know, they're not playing Nebworth today. But you know, Yes had a lot of years of neglect, really. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't really follow through on the 90125 kind of stadium era. And I think they've sort of found the level that sort of works for them. I think potentially the other thing is that, you know, Ian Gillan, you know, still, you know, the signature voice, Ian Pace, the constant member through every lineup, Roger Glover, you know, again, pretty much constant for most of the career. You know, it's still a very solid core. And I think the thing that Purple have been pretty good at is their choice of replacements. You know, Don Airey on keyboards, you know, very much someone who would have been known by the Purple fan base whenever he joined, you know, and pretty much welcomed with open arms. Much as I like him, I'm not necessarily sure you can say that about Jeff Downes. And, you know, certainly Steve Morse, you know, very, very well received, you know, by the Purple fan base and backed up by a great recording and live performances. So I think they've kept the bar pretty high. They've kept the fan base engaged. They've kept producing studio albums. Yes, haven't quite managed to do that the same way.
I think that we're missing out one thing here. And I mean, I'm hoping this isn't Jeff just trying to be pro Deep Purple here, but I'm looking at the tour dates here as well. And I'm seeing a lot of Almo Festival, Blues Festival, Summerside Festival. So they're playing, it's not them bringing in the people. They're playing in a lot of festival dates, which is easy to kind of make it look like, wow, they're playing so many big places. Well, if it was just Deep Purple, I guarantee you they wouldn't be playing festival dates. I mean, you can say all you want about their legacy and stuff like that. Deep Purple does not have the drawing power that they did, you know, 20 years ago. There's just no way, okay? And, you know, they're doing the smart thing, though. They're playing a lot of festivals because they can get in front of more people that way, right? A lot of bands don't like doing festivals because that means that, you know, that they're not in control of the surroundings as much. You know, you have to get your gear off and on a certain time, and you know, you don't like it too bad, you know. But you know, these guys, when I'm looking at their dates here too, they're playing a few halls as well and stuff like that. It's not like they're all playing all stadiums, but I mean, the summer dates here for North America that they're doing together, I mean, I'm looking at it now here, like when they're playing in Toronto, they're playing Budweiser stage. That's another thing you got to keep in mind too. They're saying the Budweiser stage. Now that means that they could only sell maybe the seats. They're not going to use the lawns, right? Or Montreal and the Bell Centre. The Bell Centre is huge. That's like 14,000. But I guarantee you, they're probably tarping half of it off and just using only like 5,000 seats of that place, right? Because they're not going to sell that whole thing. There's no way.
Yeah.
Okay. I'd be shocked if they did that. And a lot of these places, they do that. I mean, I've seen huge bands, okay? Like for example, Iron Maiden can play in Europe and get huge numbers in Europe. But when they came to Toronto, even when they got Bruce Dickinson back that first tour, they played at Maple Leaf, not Maple Leaf, but Air Canada Centre, and they still had to, you know, tarp off about half of it. And Bruce Dickinson hit the roof because of that too. He goes, I can't believe North American Maiden fans didn't show up, blah, 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 blah. How could we only sell 7,000 tickets? You know, that's just how it is here. I mean, unless you're, you know, a big act like, you know, I'm not going to say Britney Spears, but you know what I mean? Like that kind of a pop level.
Yes.
I mean, these bands, I mean, they should be happy they're still getting 7,000, 8,000 people to go to a show. I mean, in North America, it's tough. In Europe, it's a lot easier. And I'm guessing in the UK, I've heard lots of stories that there's not as many big halls to play in. Like, there's not as many, like, 15,000-plus places. Usually, most bands that I see playing are, like, 1,500 to, like, 3,000-seat places, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And that's exactly why it's good to have you here, Mark, because I looked at the figures for US and Canada, and I didn't imagine that you know there was that kind of flexibility in terms of the numbers, because I looked at Fort Worth, the capacity being 14,000, and the Broadview stage at Saratoga Performing Arts Center capacity 25,000, and that's the, like you're saying, that's the one where they've got a big lawn and lots of outdoor space and so on. Yeah. And yes, the Toronto. The Budweiser place in Toronto, which capacity is, 15,867, according to the internet. So it doesn't mean to say that they'll get those numbers.
I imagine as well, though, that I think Deep Purple would probably be a band who would draw much more casual fans than Yes would.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it's
do you know what I mean? You know, there's people who would go, oh, you know, Deep Purple, I know Smoke in the Water, you know, I've heard them, you know. You know, and they might go and see them. I think, you know, people will pretty much have a view as to whether they want or don't want to go and see Yes. They're pretty unlikely to go and, you know, go out of curiosity or hoping to hear Owner of a Lonely Heart because they liked it in the 80s, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Well, the other thing, several other things I want to go into, but first of all, I had a look as I was going through those venues at the cost of this tour. So you'd expect with two bands and two, well, we'll talk about whether they're sharing or not, but two big name bands, as it were, sharing the bill, you'd expect the tickets to be more expensive than one of them on their own. However, the Classic Tales of Yes tour, which is the one that I'm going to in a few weeks' time in the UK, they are slightly more expensive than I've been used to, actually, but I think that's the world over, isn't it? With the cost of living crisis everywhere, everything is going up, and certainly they are more expensive than last tour I managed to go to. However, the VIP, and that's an interesting thing that we'll come back to in a minute. You can get a Yes VIP ticket to this combined tour, which is interesting, I think, because that means that it's much less likely that it's Yes and kind of in second place on this tour, but they are very, very much more expensive over in Canada and the US for this tour. And in fact, I mean, I don't know if these things ever sell at all, but if you want to be in row A for one of these concerts that I just mentioned, I looked it up and you could pay up to $1,500 for a single seat in row A. So, I mean, you'll have to tell us. Mark, is that the sort of thing that happens now?
Well, it's a good thing you asked me, because let me tell you something. Having worked with the Yes podcast with you, and having worked with the Kiss FAQ podcast, I've been exposed to the whole VIP thing for quite a long time. Having especially dealt with it with the Kiss side of things, this is a windfall for Kiss, for example. Because the VIP tickets, and they have like a platinum package, a gold package, and this and that, where you can get like a better seat upgrade. You can come back and meet the band and get this and that, a photo. But see, here's the thing. Back in the day, back in 2004 or so when they were doing it, it was worth doing it. It was maybe like $500 or something like that. You would go there and you can hang out with the band in the backstage with them in this room for like 15, 20 minutes, talk to them all you want. But the problem now with this, and why I would never pay for any band's one now, because they all seem to do the same thing, is you pay for it, you get your seat, you come back and see them, and it's basically line up like a bunch of cattle in a line, and one by one go in there, stand in front of the band, click, next, click, next, click, next. You get like maybe 30 seconds. Hi, I really love you guys. Okay, bye. And then you're out, you know? That is not worth $1,500, okay, to go there and just say a few words to the guys and then get them the hell out of there. Back in the day when you were able to sit there and actually stay there for like a while, that was worth it then, you know? And I mean, the fact that they're having a VIP is a shock to me, considering how Steve Howe is a known germaphobe, I think, or doesn't want to have anybody come near him or touch him. I mean, why do they want a VIP happening is beyond me, but I know why they are doing it. Is because it's a great way to supplement their money, because they're making, some of these bands make big money doing that. I mean, Rick Wakeman, I'm pretty sure that he does, you know, meet and greets at all his tours. And, you know, it's probably worth doing it with Rick, because he's a chatterbox. He's a funny guy. You can sit there and hang around with him for a bit. But, you know, depending on how it is, will is dependent on whether you think it's worth it. Me personally, I'll never ever pay for that, you know, especially considering that if I, you know, hopefully because I know Billy pretty well now, you know, I can probably just go back and chat with him for a while and that's it, right? But I'm not going to pay $1,500. That's crazy.
Yeah, it does seem absolutely, absolutely mad.
My take on this, I think there's two things. I don't think this contradicts anything Mark says. Number one, you know, these bands make their money by touring. They don't make money by selling records. And, you know, people seem to want to pay for these experiences. I did the VIP on the Yes 50 shows at the London Palladium. It didn't cost $1,500. and Mr. Howe was incredibly engaging. I'd actually brought a photograph that one of my friends had taken on a Cruise to the Edge show and was asking, I'd got it blown up to A3, and I was asking the guys to sign it. And Steve took a look at the photo and he goes, oh my God, this is a great photo. Where did you get that from? And I said, oh, it's my friend who Cruised to the Edge. And he said, hey guys, have a look. Whenever this guy comes past, have a look at his photograph. It's a really cool photo. And he was most engaging. And I have a lovely photo of me standing behind him with Steve Howe smiling. I did say something humorous before the the shutter button was clicked. I'll not repeat it on the air. It was a little bit rude. Yeah. But it certainly made all the guys smile. And that for me, that was a great experience. So there we go. It was a matter of moments. I'd never met any of them before. It was cool to do at that particularly special event. I wouldn't feel the need to ever do it again, but I'm glad I did it when I did it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying to people not to do it. I'm just saying you got to just, you know, look at it if it's something that you feel that you want to do and if you have a reason to do it. I mean, I know some people that do, let me read it like this. On the Kiss cruise, they have this thing where you can meet up with Paul Stanley and you can buy one of his guitars. And to meet him, you have to spend like $7,000 to buy the guitar. He'll sign it for you and you can hang out with him for 10 minutes. And he brings about like 15 guitars with him. And they all sell out all the time because there's, believe it or not, there's some pretty wealthy Kiss fans out there. You'd be shocked, you know, that some of these people, how much they drop for this stuff. It's unbelievable. So if you have the money and you feel it's good, then do it, right?
What I do know on a related note is that the other band in the bill that we've been talking about, that in their meet and greets, the lead singer does not attend.
Oh yes, I know.
So I've seen lots of meet and greet photographs with four of the members of Deep Purple, which to me is a bit of a, you know, I don't really know why you do that.
No. Yes, indeed. Okay, well, just passing on from that, from the cost, and I did see a few comments from people that we probably all recognize as super fans, if they want to be called that, but great fans of the band who generally go to almost all, if not all, the dates on a particular tour in the US and in the UK, bemoaning the fact that, you know, when you're used to having a relatively reasonably priced ticket right at the front to see your favorite band who you've spent a lot of time with and a lot of money on over the years, you are priced out because they're sharing the bill with someone like Deep Purple. It's an interesting one. Mm. And yes, that point about sharing the bill. And what I did, I sent through to you both an image, which I will put on the show notes for this week, with all the different posters advertising Yes and Deep Purple and some interesting differences between them. So the first one there is the Deep Purple and Yes One More Time Tour, it says on it. And at the top, it says celebrating 50 years of Smoke on the Water. And on the left at the top is Deep Purple 50. On the right is Deep Purple 50. And Yes, although the logo, the Yes logo is, you know, an appropriately large size alongside the Deep Purple one. And it says at the bottom, deeppurple.com. deep-purple.com. I'm not quite sure why they've got both of those, but anyway, and yesworld.com is on there. But it feels to me like it's pretty much Deep Purple with Yes. Is that how it comes over to you, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I've looked at a lot of different advertisements for it because unfortunately the link you sent me, it didn't seem to work on my phone, but I did look up on here. There's a lot of already placed ads for this, so I probably have a lot of the ones you sent.
Yeah.
And with the ones that I've seen on here, it does look very much like they're marketing it like Deep Purple, oh, and by the way, Yes is going to be on before us kind of appearance, yeah. But maybe that's the way, you know, that's the way that it might be attendance-wise in their eyes. Maybe they feel that they'll be the bigger draw. Maybe they feel that, you know, or it could also be, too, that they might feel that their 50th anniversary is a bigger event than, let's say, a Yes 50th anniversary. That could be another factor, too, because, you know, Smoke on the Water and that album, that was a pretty big record, too. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, numerically speaking, as far as record sales go, it was a pretty big album for them. So, yeah. It does appear with the ads that it's just those two. The only thing that I'm kind of curious about is it just those two, or do they have like a local opener as well? I've never really saw anything about that.
No, I've not seen anything about any other bands playing. Yeah. And I was interested with the second image there, Jeff, which is Deep Purple's standard One More Time tour poster.
Yeah.
And it's the same background. So you've got the Deep Purple background. So really the whole impact of this poster, I think, is Deep Purple with Yes. But yeah. When they've toured the UK and when they've toured in the EU, they have had what is very much a support band. So Reef have done the support in the UK, and Jefferson Starship, another very old, started in the 60s, didn't they, as well? Jefferson Starship as well. Yeah. And they are termed special guests. So it says Deep Purple, One More Time Tour with special guests, Reef and Jefferson Starship. So that feels, Jeff, a bit different.
It does, doesn't it? They're lower down the poster. I mean, I guess Reef, yeah, I was surprised when I saw that. I mean, to me, they were kind of a bit of a one-hit wonder band, really.
Yeah.
Didn't even know they were still existing. Jefferson Starship, I'm guessing, must be almost practically devoid of any original members because I think they're mostly dead, or not part of the band. I don't even know who from Jefferson Starship would still be in that group. Mm-hmm. But I guess, again, maybe complimentary to the sort of people in Europe who might go and see Deep Purple. Yeah,
yes,
kind of, sort of.
Yes. That's nice.
Well, that was Starship now, wasn't it? So, I don't know. Isn't there Starship, Jefferson Starship, and Jefferson Airplane? They're three different bands.
Like, yes,
I think they still play the same material.
Yeah, but like, yes, they probably need their very own family tree, don't they?
Yeah, for sure.
But yes, what I was comparing this to, and in fact, the last time I think, Mark, that you saw Yes on the Royal Affair tour, and that was very much Yes headlining, Asia playing as well, and then they had John Lodge. Which it says John Lodge of the Moody Blues, Carl Palmer's ELP Legacy, and finally on the list there, guest vocals by Arthur Brown. And that's a very, very different way of displaying the different bands that are on there. And also, if you look further back, Toto and Yes, 2015 summer tour, Yes were alongside Toto. You know, there wasn't one above the other on that poster. Yes, yeah, were very definitely...
Headline.
Yeah, co-headlining. And the same with Styx and Yes. But interesting to see that Styx were on the left and Yes were on the right. And this is really getting into the weeds, isn't it? But I do feel that perhaps for the first time since the early 70s, and I was trying to work out exactly when it was, but I couldn't really find out when the last time Yes weren't on last in the show. And that's the important thing, I think. It looks like Deep Purple will always play second at each of these concerts. And that means that Yes go on first, and that means they're opening act, and that means that they are not what you would traditionally call headlining any of these concerts. And I can't find anywhere notification that Yes will go on second sometimes and Deep Purple sometimes. I think Yes will always be first on this tour. And that's going to be new for Yes. Do you think that matters at all, Jeff, or do you think I'm just being sensitive?
I think in the Deep Purple context, Deep Purple are the bigger band. And my guess is that, you know, that probably there's any number of bands that Deep Purple could have filled those venues with, you know, with a different support band. So I'm not necessarily sure that adding Yes to this bill is going to massively impact Deep Purple's numbers any more than if it were Styx or Toto or any of those guys. But I guess it's an opportunity for Yes to go out and do that. And why wouldn't they?
Yep. Mark, do you see Yes as an opening act?
Well, I mean, look, I think at this point, if it's going to bother him, it'll just be ego hurt. You know, that, oh, we're not the headliner. I think that's about it, because in my opinion, this might actually benefit Yes. And right. Again, I'm already going to prepare to hide behind the sofa from the tomatoes and eggs that are going to come when I say this. But, you know, people know my opinion on Yes touring of late. You know, Steve has been a little here and there with some of the shows lately, you know, and some of the songs he hasn't been playing too up to snuff, in my opinion, compared to how he was before.
Okay.
Maybe playing an hour set or an hour 10 minutes might be right up their alley. They could play some really good tunes from their catalogs. They have lots of great stuff to play.
Yeah.
And maybe it might actually benefit them to play this long. Maybe it might be just right in his perfect wheelhouse for performance. And they might come off looking much better for it, in my opinion. Right? And the one thing that I find very interesting is that Jeff mentioned that they don't think that adding Yes will bring any extra numbers to the show that they would normally bring, Deep Purple, right? But I find that that's kind of strange if that's true, because usually why bands do these kind of things is because it does increase the number of people. When I saw the Deep Purple playing, I think it was I can't remember what the second band was, but it was Deep Purple, somebody else, and Dream Theater that were playing. Right. And that was a really good show. And you would be surprised how many Dream Theater people were in the audience for that show, you know?
Yeah.
And for that kind of, I'd be very surprised if at these shows that it would be, you know, 90% Deep Purple and 10% Yes. I think we might have more Yes people in there than you might think. And it probably will help the numbers, I think.
Mm. I'm sorry. What I meant when I said that was, it's Yes in this case. You know, if it were Toto, I imagine there'd be a core of Toto fans. If it were Styx, I imagine there'd be a core of Styx fans. I think definitely having another band on there will shift the numbers, but probably not. I don't necessarily see Yes as being, you know, a massive addition. You know,
maybe not in some spots, but I can tell you this: in Toronto and Montreal, there will be, because we get to see them so rarely on this side of the place that a lot of people are going to say, you know what, I don't care if it's Deep Purple, I don't care if I hate them, I'm still going to go see Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's a good point. And it certainly doesn't seem to be, we'll have to draw this to a close because we're going to go on all night otherwise, but it certainly doesn't seem to be that it will be the same, I mean, it can't because they don't have enough time, but the same set list as the classic Tales of Yes tour list. So hopefully, as you've already said, Mark, hopefully they will reach back and bring out some slightly different things, some slightly unusual things, and fingers crossed, maybe more of the current release, the current album. They certainly said that they will be playing something from that, but it would be lovely to think that they could bring something else from the current album, Mirror to the Sky. Wouldn't that be great, Mark?
Absolutely. I mean, look, they have some good songs that are, you know, under 8 minutes on that record as well. You know, even if they played an 8 minute song, it's still, you can play a couple of those rather than playing like a Gates of Delirium. You know what I mean? You can, and I think that they have a lot of songs in their back catalog as well that they can go back into and pull out still from Drama or even Turbado or even even further back, you know, like there's stuff on Yes album or even, hey, Time in a Word. There's some records, you know, there's some songs on there they could play. You know, this is their chance to say, you know what, we're on a different kind of tour. Let's pull out some different songs that we haven't played before, and that's that. I think it would be a great idea.
Yeah.
As a Yes fan, and for your sake, Mark, I really hope that's true. I could also see them going, you know, we pretty much need to play the stuff that, you know, the populace knows. I know you can't see, I don't think you've saw the poster, but the poster for the Styx and Yes tour, it has, you know, song names on it.
Yes.
And the Yes songs are Owner of a Lonely Heart, Roundabout, Wondrous Stories, I've Seen All Good People, Starship Trooper, Yours Is No Disgrace, Long Distance Runaround, Perpetual Change.
Yeah.
And I think it repeats. My guess is you'll probably get something a bit more like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, but the thing is that was also when they were supposed to be more of a headliner too. They were co-headlining. If it doesn't matter, if there's supposed to be so many Deep Purple people in the audience, then what do they care? You know, what I mean, they can play whatever they want then, if that's the theory, right?
Yeah,
true,
yeah,
true. Yeah. You got four sides of topographic oceans.
Yes, let's have that. Let's have that. Yes, and then Mark, it'll give you a chance to go to the bar.
Yeah,
for size 2 and 3. That'd be lovely. Okay, well, let's bring this to a close. It's been absolutely brilliant having a really good think and a talk about this. But let's finish off with three comments, one from each of us. We'll start with Jeff. If you could choose, would you go and see a full Yes concert, or would you, not necessarily Deep Purple, but would you rather see them with other bands? Because, and the reason I say this is because I've never seen Yes on a bill with any other bands. I've only ever seen Yes with no support, as it says. It always makes me chuckle. Yes, I've got no support tonight. So what would you rather? Sort of one end, I suppose, is the festival, and the other end is a full just Yes show. Which would you rather see, Jeff?
Absolutely. Would always rather see the full Yes show under their control. Mm. But if that particular lineup came to my island, a Deep Purple and Yes show, I would definitely go. And for me, it would be seeing Yes with Deep Purple as a nice bonus. So.
Great. Mark?
I love the idea of having other bands, because, I mean, I've seen Yes, you know, quite a few times too. And, you know, I just think that having sometimes a big band like this with them, It's good. I think it kind of gives you, you know, both ends of the spectrum musically, and it makes for an enjoyable listening night. You know?
Right. Yeah. And actually, I would like to see Yes with another band as well, because I've never done that. It would be absolutely great. Yeah. And I do think that, thinking back of the ones I have seen, for the symphonic tour, it would have been lovely to have some just orchestral pieces before Yes even took to the stage. That would have been quite something as well. But yes, definitely if Deep Purple came with Yes to do a tour of the UK, yes, indeed, I would be there as well. So don't take our words for it, though. Have your say on the show notes for this week. Please do leave a comment there and let us know what you think. Deep Purple and Yes, are you looking forward to it if you're going to get to see it? Do you not think Yes should be doing this sort of thing? Have your say. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Jeff.
Thank you. Good to be back.
And thank you, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
The 11th Illusion of Yes Music Podcast.
Just before we go, here are the YMP producers and half the patrons. Yes Music Podcast producers are Joseph Cottrell, Ken Fuller and Jeffrey Cresselius. And Yes Music Podcast patrons, or at least half of them, are Mark Baggs, John Cowan, John Parry, Dave Owen, Simon Barrow, Steve Scott, Terence Sadler, Steve Dill, Robert Naser, Fergus Cubbage, William Hayes, Jeff Bailey, Stephen Raw, Lobate Scarp, Jeffrey Mason, Dave Watkinson, Tim Stannard, Robert Vanderveer, Brian Sullivan, David Pannell, Jamie McQuinn, Miguel Falcao, Paul Tomei, Michael O'Connor, Brian Harris, H.B. Peterson and Guy de Rome. As always, thank you very much indeed to those patrons. If you'd like to join them, becoming a patron and helping us out financially, please head over to Patreon, patreon.com/yesmusicpodcast, or click the link on yesmusicpodcast.com. So that's just about all the time we have this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. We do hope to be back next week, and in the meantime, please do keep listening and getting involved via x.com, Facebook or Instagram. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.